Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
I think the talent has always been there. He's certainly someone that has the physicality. I think the floor here is if, you know, he doesn't find a way to sort of command his full arsenal.
The name is Kamar Rocker. If you're a college baseball fan, you've heard that name for a while now. He is the top prospect in the Texas Rangers farm system, and he could make a big impact in Major League Baseball this year. Let's hit a prospect profile. Scott Braun, along with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Let's get to it. JJ, Kamar Rocker this year for the Rangers in the rotation, making a big impact. What do you think?
I would say that we saw him at the end of last year. I think they need him to make an impact this year. There's only one big hurdle, and you mentioned it. You know, Kamar Rocker's been a guy that everyone has been watching, paying attention to for years now. I remember watching him in high school, and he was already a dude, and he was already physically a dude when he was in high school. But goes to Vandy, has one of the better freshman years, especially one of the best postseasons we'll ever see in college baseball. And you think at that point, okay, by now we're talking about a guy who's years into his big league career, and then the injury strike. And even like later in his Vanderbilt career, like in his draft year, you would see that velocity kind of wax and wane depending on the outing. The Mets draft him, and then they don't sign him, and they say the medicals, they had to back away. The Rangers then go out and draft him, and then he blew out his elbow. And so that's why we're still talking about him as a prospect coming into 25, but that's also the question. That the biggest question I would say that we face with Rocker in 25, you want to see him improve his secondaries, the third pitch, to kind of help him better as a starter. But the big thing is how many innings are they going to be comfortable letting him go this year? Because of the injuries, we are years away from the last time that Kamar Rocker went 100 innings in a season or close to it. Are they going to be willing? Are they going to be able to basically hand him the ball and say, okay, we can expect 20, 25 starts out of you? Jeff, that's the question that it's going to be really interesting to see, because stuff-wise, there shouldn't be as much of a question.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's probably a bigger question in terms of health. I do think there's some stuff that popped up and sort of showed itself in the major leagues. In particular, he's probably going to have to switch off of that four-seam fastball. It graded really poorly on a ton of stuff models, the public ones like, you know, Eno Saris's Stuff Plus, et cetera, that's on Fangraphs. The sinker grades out as a plus pitch. I think he probably ends up having to go there. He's lost some rides since his college days. I think some of that was the tracking devices. Some of it might also be, you know, some of the elbow and shoulder injuries that he's dealt with. We've seen that happen with other prospects. Forrest Whitley's a guy that sort of lost some of his ride over time and switched to a sinker. The sinker plays pretty well, might make him a little bit less of a strikeout guy and more of a bad contact guy that can miss bats with that slider. Certainly the development of a third pitch, you know, whether that ends up being, you know, his cutter or his changeup or sort of a combination of the two, it should be interesting to see, you know, how that stuff develops over the course of the year, how the Rangers decide to sort of develop him, and, you know, where the arsenal sort of goes from there. It is an interesting pitch mix. I think just the big question is, you know, what's the third pitch, and does he really make that switch to a primary sort of two-seam sinker type of fastball and maybe only throw the four-seamer in certain counts?
I kind of think with that also, like, this is going to be the crucial year for this, because of the timetable and all. okay, we really are going to see on that third pitch. You know, maybe it is a cutter. Maybe, again, it could be a changeup. But I would especially say he's going to throw in a curve as well. But I would love to see kind of a cutter that just gives him something else in the zone that really kind of would start pushing Rocker to being more of that bad contact, that weak contact kind of guy, not the, you know, maybe a little less than the strikeouts than maybe people expected if you saw him back in 2019 in the postseason for Vandy and all. But the slider's still really good. But I would also say with that, like, if that doesn't come along, and I think he's going to have plenty of time to work here as a starter to see if it does, but it also is a mix, Jeff, to me, that does say, like, if it didn't work out as a starter long term, it could be, he could be a really good reliever. I don't want to pit, you know, I think he's going to end up as a starter, but the fallback options I feel like here are pretty good as well, as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, you brought up a good point. You know, the slider is a really good pitch. I think some people probably refer to it as a cutter and then, you know, call the curveball a slider. It's just sort of how the pitches are shaped, but could get a little bit more of like a ride, traditional, maybe like a cut fastball. You know, that might be another, you know, element that he could sort of add to his game. But once again, we don't know what the medicals are fully. We don't know what his limitations are in terms of like what types of pitches he can throw. But I think the talent has always been there. He's certainly someone that has the physicality. I think the floor here is if, you know, he doesn't find a way to sort of command his full arsenal, which was a little bit of an issue in the major leagues in terms of hitting his spots and showing consistent command, and isn't able to handle a huge workload, maybe he's a multi-inning reliever that can be really nasty in, you know, high leverage situations. So I think he does have the stuff to be successful as a major leaguer. It's just, does he have the durability? Does he have the track record, you know, of strike throwing, all those sort of things to be, you know, a starter that can go out there and give you 25 plus starts a year? And I think that question is still just very much up in the air.
The other thing that does stand out to me, though, is this is an organization that there's two number one prospects. There's 1A and 1B. Rocker is basically big league ready. Sebastian Walcott's not. But if you're a Rangers fan, after you just graduated Wyatt Langford, you just graduated Evan Carter, now you have Rocker and you have Walcott knocking on the door before too long, that's a pretty good situation to be in. You know, especially, I know last year was not, 2024 was not the year that Rangers fans wanted, but you know, that World Series, the champagne smell is just kind of coming out after that 23 season. So it does feel like that the Rangers are in a pretty decent spot right now.
Yeah, and Walcott was a riser, right? We weren't talking a lot about him in this kind of conversation a year ago. So you love to see that when you're not excited about someone or you just don't know about someone, and then all of a sudden he hits the equation here for this team. I want to finish with this. I didn't hear the word that I was looking for from Rocker. Can we call it a death ball? Is that still a thing? Remember when that was a thing last year, like the little baby curve? I think he calls it a curve. Can we say that he has a death ball just because it's good marketing?
I think from
I wouldn't say death. I would say like it can cut you, but I don't know if you're going to bleed out.
Okay. Doom ball, Jeff. Doom ball. Like it's a minor version of the death ball.
Yeah. I mean, it's a harder curve ball with, you know, less, vertical drop. It's sort of slurvy in nature. Maybe has like a little bit more like drop than your typical slurve. But it's a hard curveball. Certainly based on like how Tread was sort of marketing the pitch when they started to talk and have the conversation around the whole death ball moniker. It certainly from like a movement perspective fits into that. I just don't know that it's, you know, it's not a pitch that he's throwing 30% of the time or anything, which, you know, if you're going to have something like a death ball, that kind of label on a pitch, it's the type of pitch that you better be leading on quite a bit because, yeah, you're killing it. Yeah. Then.
I would say Spencer you can't Strider, give him that's 10%. A death ball. That's a death ball.
Strider. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we're just trying to come up with some other names, right? The Ghost Fork, obviously, that earns its nickname. It's ridiculous for Senga and he uses it plenty. So, all right, Doomball maybe, or I don't know if he even uses it enough to be able to call it that, but I think Rangers fans will just settle for, you know, 25 plus starts and keeping him in the rotation and seeing him do good things for them and finally kind of live up to what we saw back in college from him. So thanks for watching this one. Of course, if you are a fan of other teams and you'd like to learn about their top prospects, we have videos for you. And if you don't see your team yet, it will be coming out on a day-by-day basis here during spring training.
This is a team that never has that year where they say, you know what? We know that realistically we're just not there. We need to take a step back to take a step forward. That's not been something that the Angels have been willing to do.
All right, let's be quick because we're covering the Angels and their top prospect while he is still a prospect. If you know, you know. Let's hit a prospect profile. The name of that prospect is Caden Dana, Scott Braun, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce. And JJ, I mention this because the Angels like to rush their prospects. So talk me through their game plan here.
Okay. Their game plan is we saw Caden Dana reach the big leagues last year. The Angels are not an organization that that preaches a whole lot of patience. So I would say that, you know, we're looking at him in spring training and a healthy Caden Dana is battling for a spot in the rotation. And then I would say, hey, what we've seen in recent years, especially with the pitchers, I would just ask for a little bit of patience. We're talking about a pitcher who is younger than some of the pitchers who will be drafted in the 2025 MLB draft. And I think he could use some additional time, an additional seasoning. I don't think that not having Caden Dana in the big leagues on opening day is going to be the difference between this club making a deep playoff run or not. I think I can feel comfortable saying that's probably not going to be the case. With that being the idea, like let's, you know, we've seen with Patrick Sandoval and Reed Detmers and Griffin Canning, and we could go through this list. There were a lot of guys who moved quickly for them, starting pitchers, and got a lot of up and down performances out of them. And Jeff, I just don't know if I would say right now, we like Caden Dana as a prospect, top 100 prospect. But I do think that we're not talking about a fully finished, a fully polished, oh, this guy has checked off every box you need to see to say he's ready to be a big league starter.
Yeah, and I think we even saw it when he came up to the big leagues last year. You know, he's a guy that gets by on really good pitchability. You know, he throws strikes, he competes in the zone consistently, he gets deeper into starts. There's a lot to be said for that. He certainly handled you know, double A as well as one could be expected at how old he was. But I think when you dig into some of the numbers, and I'm not the first person to call this, you know, to the forefront with Dana, his release spot, his release heights on his pitches are all over the place. What that means, it's a little bit easier to pick everything up. You know, he's throwing from a 73-inch release height on the fastball, and then it drops down 4 or 5 inches for the slider. It drops down about 4 or 5 inches for the changeup. And he mixes in a curveball that actually comes from a higher slot than his fastball. All these teams have access to this information. It's going to be out there in pregame scouting reports. After the first, you know, at bat or even the first couple of pitches, guys are going to start picking up, you know, where the ball's coming out of the hand. These are major league hitters. These guys are great at adjusting, great at picking up little, you know, details and little idiosyncrasies of each one of these players that I think Dana probably is best served spending more time at double A if they'd actually want to send a prospect to triple A for the first time in a very long time. Perhaps that's where he ends up. You know, I think there's even a case that could be made that maybe Dana shouldn't have been our number one prospect. Maybe really Christian Moore might be the more upside guy when you think about all the tools that he has and some of the stuff that maybe he needs to refine isn't quite the gap to get to major league regular that I think it is with Dana right now. There's four different pitch shapes. Like I said, he can compete with all of them. He throws them for strikes. He gets deep into starts. You know, he showed efficiency and the ability to get outs consistently at the double A level. I still think he needs a little bit more time just to be nurtured a little bit more in terms of, you know, making sure the release heights are just a little bit more consistent because those gaps of 4 or 5 inches are pretty big gaps when you're talking about a guy who doesn't, you know, that isn't throwing a slider that's, you know, outlier movement or outlier velocity or a combination of the both. It's kind of stock sort of pitch mix. And there's some elements that I feel like lack deception. And I think that's an element that sometimes is hard to measure with the numbers, but when we see it in the release heights, I think it's really quite a big issue. So needs a little bit more time. I think he was rushed a little bit too quickly to the major leagues, but that's kind of been the MO for the Angels over the last 3-4 seasons.
I do want to kind of on it in positive, you know, say something positive about Dana here, which is we do like him. This is a guy who has big league starter potential. Most of his peers, most of his contemporaries are hoping to get to Double A in 2025. He's already reached the majors. It's just that, yeah, you want to see him get to add this polish. You want to see him, the things Jeff mentioned, these aren't unsolvable problems. They're just things that ideally you want to fix while you're in the minors, not the majors. So I would say with all of this, it's like, please, a little bit of patience here. And kind of could say the same thing. Christian Moore reached Double A last year, pretty much, you know, seemingly a couple of hours after he signed, which is not that unusual for the Angels and what they do with their top picks. It, as Jeff mentioned, this is really kind of a strange situation where the Angels don't really use their high A or their triple A clubs a whole lot for their best prospects, which kind of makes for an uneven development process because you're asking guys a lot of the times. Nelson Rada is another one we saw this with, who jumped straight to Double A and was one of the youngest players in that league. Probably should have been in high A, but the Angels don't really send their top prospects to high A. Their top college draftees often go to Double A, you know, almost straight from the draft. We see that over and over. And yeah, there are examples where it's worked out. Zach Neto's a guy where it worked out. There's also a lot of guys where it hasn't worked out, where you look back and say, okay, you know, Nolan Chanuel's already burned a year plus of service time trying to figure it out in the big leagues. And he's not like completely lost up there, but he's not making a big impact or anything like that. And by pushing guys that quickly, you kind of are asking them to figure out some of the toughest things to figure out at the toughest level, rather than letting them figure that out in the minors in games that don't count the same way that they count in the big leagues.
JJ, philosophical question for you. Why? I mean, you know, do the locker rooms smell in AAA? Why would they do this? And the reason I ask it with such curiosity is it's one thing if this is being done by many other organizations. I don't feel like the Angels have earned the recent right to be going against the grain or setting a tone and saying, you know what, this is the right way to develop prospects. That's what confuses me. I mean, I obviously always have this cynical brain that says, you know, does ownership want to see who he picks as a shiny toy in the big leagues too quickly? But you can maybe bring me back down to earth and tell me what's happening here.
I'd say two things. One, I do follow, like, Salt Lake is not a fun place to pitch. So there is a little bit of an aversion, not just there, but you're playing Salt Lake, you're in Reno, you're in parks that are really tough pitchers' parks. So, okay, maybe you want to avoid some of that. And that there's some logic to that. But the other thing is that we've just seen over and over is that it's kind of this never-ending cycle, which is the team has lacked upper-level minor league depth, which kind of then means that your best options sometimes are these players who really may not be ready, right? So it could be something where you say, okay, you know, well, this guy could use some more time. But if you're really looking at it, asking the question and saying, well, who's our best option? In a lot of these cases, these have been the best options. These players who may not be fully ready, but the Angels kind of have never, we saw this with the Shohei Ohtani final year of his contract, right? There's just never, even though this is a team that has not gone to the playoffs in a really long time, you know, and Mike Trout is still sitting on one career postseason hit. This is a team that never has that year where they say, you know what? We know that realistically we're just not there. We need to take a step back to take a step forward. That's not been something that the Angels have been willing to do. And again, I would say under this ownership, under multiple front offices under this ownership, and because of that, you see guys kind of pushed up there faster than maybe they're ready in some cases because, well, we don't really have another good option. This is a team that has not had a whole lot of AAA, kind of that depth that you can just plug in when an injury arises. And there have been plenty of injuries also, obviously, for the Angels.
Yeah, it's a very unique organization. And, of course, it always looks weird when you match them up with the team that's pretty close by in the Dodgers, but it is what it is right now, and they're going through it still as an organization. Hope you enjoyed this one. Obviously got some good Caden Dana and a little bit of Christian Moore talk in there. And if you get yourself a Baseball America subscription, you can learn a lot more about the Angels organization, specifically their farm system. We do these for every single team, going through top prospect by top prospect. So check out some other videos.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Let's see how this goes. Let's see if this guy can turn into something. And I do think he has the upside, you know, to potentially be a fringe sort of all-star level player.
Let's hit the top prospect in the Houston Astros organization. The name is Cam Smith. It's prospect profile time. Scott Braun with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Jeff, tell us about Cam Smith, acquired in the Kyle Tucker deal. And obviously Astros fans have been looking for that next big star to attach themselves to and follow, hopefully, to the big leagues, maybe even this year.
I think it's possible, probably less likely, that he sees an extensive amount of time. Depending upon what the injuries are, where he ends up shaking out defensively is all a big part of it. That being said, I think this is one of the first prospects the Astros have had in quite a long time that you could be really, really excited about. He was a slam dunk top 100 prospect right inside of our top 50. The feedback that we got throughout the top 100 process kept getting better and better and better. Even the feedback that I was getting when I put together my Cubs list, when we put out those top 10s and he was inside that Cubs top 10, obviously was still a Cub in the handbook, ends up, you know, the trade happens after our deadline with Tucker moving to the Cubs. This was the big piece that the Astros asked for in that trade, more so than Paredes or Wesneski. It was Smith that they wanted. It was a player that they were on and just didn't have access to in the draft. Really, really good athlete. Somebody that over the last couple of years, since I saw him as a draft-eligible sophomore after his freshman season on the Cape, throughout that summer, working with Tino Martinez, took some massive steps forward in terms of the bats of ball ability, the hit tool, knowing what to swing at, getting into his power more consistently. And that continued to track upward as he went to FSU and then obviously had one of the best debuts of anybody in that 2024 draft. Really, really good athlete. He hasn't necessarily translated to the defensive side of the ball, but moves well for his size. There's power output. You know, the hit tool, like I said, has come along. He's always had pretty good swing decisions, you know, doesn't chase a whole lot, keeps a pretty tidy zone. He's going to get on base. He can run a little bit. The big question, though, is does he end up at third base long term, which is his natural position? He has sort of the tools to maybe play a corner outfield spot, including the arm and enough foot speed to handle enough range in an outfield corner. Or he's big enough that he and has sort of the offensive profile that maybe he moves to first base. Now, they committed some money to Christian Walker in a few years. It might be a few years away. That's not going to stop the Astros from potentially giving him looks at a variety of different positions. Not the same level of prospect, but we did see like a Joey Laporfido last year play it, or last couple of years play second base, play, you know, some first base, play some center field, some other corner outfield spots. So I do think they'll focus on positional versatility with Smith, hoping that he sort of locks down a position.
I would say with that, we saw that, you know, Dana Brown has said that they're going to look him at third base. They're going to look at him in right field. They're going to look him at first base. In the long term, generally when you hear something like that, that does not mean you can kind of look at the defensive spectrum and say he's probably not going to end up at the toughest of those positions. There are exceptions to that. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But if you told me that this means that Cam Smith's more likely to be an outfielder as an Astro, wouldn't shock me. And I think that there's going to be the opportunity there that they could use him in the outfield. I think third base, if he can pull off being a third baseman long-term, obviously say that's best for him and best for the Astros. But the key thing here, as Jeff mentioned, is the bat. And if the bat is as good as we think it could be, it's not really going to matter that much because he could be a very productive outfielder. You know, has the bat to kind of carry that. And I do think that, again, working on that versatility this year while he's still in the minors also kind of does kind of provide those multiple options. As Jeff mentioned, you got Christian Walker, but if there's an injury at first base, he could fit in as a plausible answer there. You know, let's see what third base looks like. Obviously Bregman's gone. Isaac Paredes is there. Let's see kind of by the time Cam Smith is ready, is third base a bigger need or is an outfield spot a bigger need where they have Astros do have a number of kind of candidates, but they don't have Kyle Tucker anymore. So I think that really the Astros, what they're getting here is a really good bat. And thankfully for them, a guy with enough athleticism, enough versatility that he could be kind of a viable option at multiple different positions, depending on what the team needs. But, you know, Jeff, kind of with that, as you mentioned, it's probably a late this year, late 25, but realistically probably 26. We're hoping to see him in Houston long term. There, you know, we're going to know a lot more, I would say, by then about how this lineup kind of sets up.
Yeah, and I think it's gonna depend on sort of who ends up shaking out as the potential outfield there in Houston. With Tucker departing, you know, there's been some talk about Jose Altuve moving to left field. Even after Alex Bregman signed in Boston, you know, Altuve moving to left seems like it's a viable option, a place that he might see some run and some opportunities. I think he's keeping the seat warm, whether it's for a Jacob Melton, you know, who is number two in this system, or Cam Smith if he moves there long term. I do think he has the tools. And I think it's sort of an interesting question as, like, you know, when Cam Smith moved in, how close was he to Melton? Melton was sort of the de facto one the last couple of years. He was the number one in the handbook. The trade happens. Smith moves ahead of him. For me, it wasn't much of a question. I just think when you look at Melton's a very good player. He hit, you know, well when he was at Oregon State. The all-around profile is very good there. But I think when you talk about offensive impact and tools, Smith has more power, has more field to hit, has sort of that athleticism, that bigger body. There's more maybe to come as well. That I think when you look at the overall player, and he was young. I mean, he's for a draft eligible sophomore, was just eligible for the draft. I think when you look at all those things, he's really the number one guy. Maybe him and Melton end up sort of fitting in with Myers or whoever it might be, you know, in center field, or, you know, maybe Melton ends up in center field and, you know, they move Myers over to a corner. I think ultimately that's how this is all going to shake out. He has the offensive upside. He has the big power with the hit tool to match. And I think, you know, if you're a Houston Astros fan, this is kind of exciting. Yeah, you lost Kyle Tucker. Yeah, you did lose Alex Bregman. You know, two major cogs in that machine that won you multiple championships. But, you know, downsizing a little bit to a young player with some upside that I think the Astros have also done a really good job of developing their internal players and making them better, regardless of what their pedigree was. I think you have to sort of trust the process a little bit and say, all right, let's see how this goes. Let's see if this guy can turn into something. And I do think he has the upside, you know, to potentially be a fringe sort of all-star level player.
All right. So to bring us to what's happening right now with the current club, JJ, the Astros, like Jeff mentioned, lose some of those superstars for a variety of reasons. It's very difficult to maintain the consistency that they've had for a very long time now. It's super impressive. When you look at the big league roster, as of now, as of when we're doing this, their outfield hitting-wise looks like it's projected to be one of the worst in baseball. It could be their 7, 8, and 9 hitters, which you rarely ever see, okay? So we're having this conversation. I start to think back to, you know, the Verlander trade, right? When they deal away, who was it, Gilbert and Clifford. Maybe that doesn't necessarily matter. Just want to get your scope of where they're at as a farm system to be able to replenish enough to be playoff contenders every year and not have pain.
So I'll say this for them. Like, they've made, yes, they are understandably thinner on the farm system. They had penalties. They had draft penalties. They had international penalties for Trash Can Gate or whatever you want to call it. They also did make trades. They've made multiple trades to try to fix up the big league club as they're making postseason runs. But Jeff, the thing that does jump out to me, I'm looking back on those trades. I can't really think of much of any of them that you look at and say, oh, they really would want to have that as a do-over, right? Like, okay, yes, they would help to have their outfield depth to still have a Drew Gilbert, but it's not like Drew Gilbert has blossomed into one of the best prospects in baseball. He's kind of still, the question's still out on him very much. So kind of as you look at this, is there any of these trades that like have happened with this over the last couple of years as you've been doing these Astros list that you look at and say, oh man, they wish they could have that one over again?
No, I think they scout their system internally really, really well. That the guys that they moved away from, I think you could argue that it was a potential overpay by, you know, moving a couple of prospects who were ascending at that point in time. I think Gilbert at the time of the trade was a top 100 prospect, but there were some whispers, you know, internally that the team thought that Melton was better than Gilbert. I had people with the organization say that flat out to me, and you usually don't hear someone, you know, speak that directly about their own players. I think when you look at Gilbert, he really hasn't progressed much from the guy that we saw at Tennessee. You know, I don't know that he would necessarily be fighting, you know, fighting for a job here. Maybe he'd fit in left field over Ben Gamble. That might be a slight upgrade. Clifford at this point, the jury is still out if he's going to make enough contact long term. So I don't know if those trades really hurt them, especially when you sort of consider Melton still here, could come up, reinforce that outfield. Cam Smith, as we've talked about throughout this, you know, could be developed as a corner outfielder, certainly has bigger offensive upside than Ivor Clifford or Gilbert or Melton for that matter. So I think the other thing you sort of have to say about the Astros is, you know, we've had them as sort of a bottom tier farm system over the last four or five seasons, but they've consistently produced players that in the major leagues outperform what their pedigree was or what their prospect rank was. I think like Yainer Diaz, we were one of the earlier outlets on them, but generally I think the overall spectrum of, you know, outlets out there ranking prospects were a little slower to move on him. Jeremy Pena sort of came off of an injured year with a very small sample size and then jumped in and, you know, was the World Series MVP. You know, so I think you sort of factor all those things in. It's still a really good lineup, one through six. It's, you know, probably as strong as just about any lineup in baseball, especially when you have Yordan Alvarez in the middle. And, you know, I know Christian Walker doesn't necessarily get the fanfare that he deserves. This is one of the best home run hitters, one of the best power hitters in the game. And he's now going to be able, and I, you know, he's a right-hander. He's going to be able to take advantage of those Crawford boxes. So I think when you look at the overall picture, they're still really strong offensively. They're still a really solid defensive team. And then you look at the pitching, they still have plenty of pitching that's under control for a couple of years. So they can still win this division. I still think they're going to compete. I'd love to see them make another move and try to reinforce that outfield, but maybe that comes internally.
Well, good. You did it. You made Astros fans feel better just now with all of that. So there you go, Astros fans. Much more coverage over at baseballamerica.com. Go get yourself a subscription. Subscribe to this YouTube channel for many more videos, including ones that cover each top prospect per organization being unveiled throughout spring training. We'll see you on the next one.
I don't think Emerson, like, are you going to get Emerson's peak maybe with those guys? I don't know. But I think there's a runway here for those guys in the next year or two, like a lot of these hitters, to be knocking on the door. We've seen it over and over and over again.
Oh, the Seattle Mariners have a very strong farm system. Let's get into their top prospect right now. Colt Emerson, your prospect profile. Scott Braun along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Jeff, Colt Emerson has a chance to be a star. Fact or fiction?
That's fact. Had an opportunity to see him in person over a couple of games during the Arizona Fall League during the first week. Only had 13 games out there. You know, was one of the younger players, was actually, I think, over 4 years younger than the average player in the AFL. So, you know, obviously was showing off really well against good competition. Hit 370, 436, 537, had 9 runs scored over 13 games. It's an offensive league, but even as far as, you know, standout offensive performances, for as young as he was as a 19-year-old in that league, you know, somebody that didn't have any experience outside of A-ball, I thought he really, really showed well. Maybe it wasn't the greatest season. Maybe he didn't necessarily meet full expectations of what we had anticipated or expected from him in 2024. I think some of that was obviously he was dealing with injuries. That's one of the reasons that he ended up in the Arizona Fall League, because he was limited to 70 games. But when we look at the underlying data, it's just like great bat-to-ball skills. There's no questions about that at all. 12.6% miss rate, which is pretty goofy. You know, doesn't swing and miss, doesn't chase or expand the zone very much. Is still the type of a player that, you know, isn't passive in the zone. He's attacking strikes when he has those opportunities. Shows above average power for his age and level. I think this is, you know, the Corey Seager comp, you know, the bat first, bigger shortstop comps get thrown around a lot. I think it is apt here. I think he is definitely somebody that sort of fits into that category of a guy who can hit for average. The power should grow. He doesn't necessarily have to sell out for that power as well. But I think when we come back to this video in 5, 6, 7 years, and you know he's had a couple years of service time in MLB, I think we're going to be talking about, you know, a 25 home run bat that can hit 280 plus, you know, play a solid shortstop, maybe a really good third base, but it's going to stick on that left side of the infield. Just a really talented all-around player.
I got good news, Mariners fans. I know that there's a lot of understandable frustration. I feel like there might even be a little bit of anger about the Mariners lineup and the lack of production they've gotten. Obviously, admittedly, it's a pitcher's park. But Emerson is one of a number of very, very impressive Mariners bats who are on the way up. That's the thing that really does jump out with him is you just feel really confident that he's going to hit for average. He's going to get on base. The power is going to be there, but you know, if you said that, speaking of Seager's, if you said that it was a Kyle Seager type power down the road, if you said that it was kind of that profile down the road, I actually would think that that's not a bad profile either, which is maybe he ends up at third base. Maybe he ends up being a high average guy, gets on base and shows above average power, but not like 30 plus home run type power. That would be great. And that would be a star, like to answer Scott's question. That to me, that's the kind of guy who goes to all-star games. And the thing that's going to be interesting to see with this Mariners group of prospects coming up is there's going to be a lot of figuring out who fits where, because there are a number of these guys who, you know, Jeff, when I look at it, there's a healthy competition going on here, because when we say who's the number one prospect of the Mariners system, it's Colt Emerson. But if you said, who's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you could make a whole lot of different arguments, because there's a lot of these guys who you could look up at the end of this year and say, oh, that guy's one of the best offensive prospects in the minor leagues, couldn't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you consider that and you consider what the talent they have in their player development system, just in terms of getting the best out of their pitching prospects, I think it's really exciting that they have all of these talented hitters up at the top. You have guys like Cole Young, you know, who's a really good all-around player. The tools are maybe a little bit less loud than others around him. Johnny Farmello is pretty tooled up, I think has big upside. Michael Arroyo, just from a pure bat-to-ball power, age-to-level production sort of standpoint, checks all those boxes in a really high-level way. I know we put out our RoboScout top 100 during the offseason. He was number 2, much to my surprise, but that's sort of how the model views him. It's very similar to a lot of models that teams use. We roll in some data to that as well. So I think it kind of puts into perspective all these guys. And we haven't even talked about Felton Celestin, who's a very talented international prospect that just hasn't been on the field all that much. Harry Ford, Lazaro Montes. And then we start to get into some of the pitching prospects who, as we just talked about with their player development system, I think anytime a talented arm gets into the Mariner system, you maybe boost them a little bit the same way you would with a Dodgers prospect, et cetera. So the fact that they have this young core of hitters that are all kind of coming up around the same time, really, really talented. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And it's something that Seattle certainly needs. They need some firepower offensively, kind of match up with Julio Rodriguez, who's still very, very young in the future and in the coming years. So I think there's a lot of reasons for excitement, especially in the infield. We talk about some of these Mariners prospects.
JJ, I'm not a Mariners fan, but I watch this team a lot and I feel the frustration. I think many people in baseball feel the frustration when you see the starting staff that they put together, especially over the last couple years, and how good they've been from start to finish in a season, and you know, haven't even made the playoffs for these last couple years. So let me ask you this. We're talking up Mariners prospects, including Emerson. Are they going to match up their timetable, their ETA, with the starting staff that they have? If not, it's a big problem, okay? Because those guys are stars. They're going to get expensive, and some of them are going to leave, if not get traded. So I've seen this happen before. I couldn't think of one in the last 30 seconds, but there are examples, if I think deeply enough, about teams that have one stage coming, but the other stage is already there. And by the time the position players all get to the show, they're like, damn, we don't really have the aces like we used to have. So we didn't time this up well.
That's a great question. And the answer is no, because the time is now. Like, you would have to have all these guys ready to go, because I don't know where you could point to and say that this is not the time for the Mariners rotation. You know, they have, I'm not saying that maybe, you know, George Kirby or Brian Wu or take your pick, someone has a better year in their future, but their pitching staff's one of the best in baseball right now. Their starting rotation and Luis Castillo, and he got the, these are guys who, it, ideally, if you had this group of prospects all ready to arrive this year for opening day, which you don't, then that would be when it's matching up pretty well. Really, to be honest, it would be them arriving the midpoint of last year so that this year they go into the season having already checked off the know what the big leagues are like. And we're talking about a number of guys who are in A-ball. So I think the other way you could approach this, and it doesn't seem like this is the way that really they're, you know, there are the DePoto quotes about sustainability. This is a team that this wave of hitters could arrive in time to kind of keep the team above 500, above, you know, above heads above water as the pitching gets expensive, as the pitching starts to hit free agency, even in some cases. But I don't think it's going to arrive in time to say, oh, it synced up perfectly, because if it synced up perfectly, they'd already be there.
Yeah. And that kind of led me into my conclusion here, which is for a team that's been run by a GM, president of baseball ops, who loves to make trades, it's been shocking to see them kind of tone down the trade activity at a time when I thought maybe they should turn it up. If they don't have the budget, acquire those cheaper league minimum bats that are potential stars who can give you more of a return now and sacrifice a little bit more of the future, because who cares? I know you want to keep it rolling for a long period of time, but no, you're shaking your head, Jeff. I mean, the 54% thing only works so much. I'd rather have 60% for a few years and then go back down to 45, 50% wins for a few years if I'm the Mariners.
Well, you got Gilbert until 27. You got Kirby until 2028, the final season that they're under contract. And then you got Miller and Wu until 29. So, like, there is a runway here. I don't think Emerson, like, are you going to get Emerson's peak maybe with those guys? I don't know. But I think there's a runway here for those guys in the next year or two, like a lot of these hitters, to be knocking on the door. We've seen it over and over and over again. A guy gets up a double A, he is not that far off from making the jump to the major leagues. That it wouldn't shock me if Emerson and a couple of these other guys debut in 2026. 2025, probably out of the question, but there is a window there where they could get those guys together for 2 or 3 years. Gilbert would be the one they would have to extend. I don't think Castillo is really in this equation for me. I'm thinking about the young pitchers that they have. And, you know, they drafted Ryan Sloan. They've got, you know, Gerangelo Sancha. Like, they have some arms here that, you know, potentially could sort of backfill Castillo and Gilbert in the future. So I don't know. I feel like they have a nice homegrown core. And the other part of it too is you got to expect that any hitters you go out and get, the production's probably going to plummet a little bit when they go into that ballpark. They got to figure out the ballpark and how to make it a better offensive environment, frankly.
The thing I would say with all of this is much like when we talk about with the Orioles. The Orioles are, when we talk about the Orioles, where it's like their one playoff series win away from kind of putting a lot of this question behind them. The Mariners are one really good season away. If they if everything comes together this year, then this will seem kind of like an obsolete thought. But until they do, this is a very fair question to ask, because we saw a young core come up together when we just mentioned all those pitchers, throwing a Julio Rodriguez, throwing a Cal Raleigh. You got to win something with it. And so far that hadn't happened. It very well could this year or in the future. But until you do, there's going to be that pressure. There's going to be that frustration, understandably, from a really good fan base to see them get over that. What's been a really long drought, let's just be honest. This is a team... If you're a Seattle Mariners fan, you've known heartbreak more than you've known success.
Yeah, you deserve better. So that's why we're here to talk it out. And you do have a really good farm system right now with some depth to it. So thanks for watching this one. We do this on every single team here in spring training. So if you've missed any, go back and check them out, and look forward to more here on the Baseball America YouTube channel.
Do not kind of lump the A's in with the bottom feeders, because I promise you, if you compare this A's lineup to, say, the Rockies lineup or the Marlins lineup or the White Sox lineup, it's not in that same comparison.
Okay, A's fans, let's talk about Nick Kurtz, their top prospect. Is he coming to the show in 2025? It's Baseball America Prospect Profile. Scott Braun with BA's J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Obviously, I want to get your take on Nick overall, but JJ, do you think that he will make an impact on the 2025 A's, a team that could surprise some people and certainly could use some more help to the lineup?
If he's healthy, and that's a big if because he's had some injury issues when he was at Wake Forest, but if he's healthy, I would say I'd be surprised if he doesn't. The best way I can lay this out is if you look at Jacob Wilson, kind of his path and him last year, Nick Kurtz should, if anything, move faster than Jacob Wilson. Nick Kurtz is... has less concern about the defense. He's a great, you know, he's a very good defender, but he's a first baseman. So we're not really having to worry about that too much. And then on top of that, you talk about his polish at the plate. Well, this is a guy who came out of Wake Forest. It's, you know, not a little bit more, you know, higher, you know, a tougher conference in college ball. And everything we've seen so far as a pro, which admittedly is about that much. It's an, you know, it's a very short pro career so far. But everything that the A's have seen so far seems to indicate that Nick Kurtz could absolutely be a fast mover. The way I would put it is if I was Tyler Soderstrom, obviously you can kind of fit Soderstrom in a couple places, could DH. But if I was Tyler Soderstrom, I would really want to get off to a really good start because there is a Nick Kurtz-sized freight train coming down the tracks behind him, and it would not shock me at all if by midseason, a little bit after that, we see Kurtz in the big leagues. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he kind of hit the ground running in the majors because, Jeff, this is a really impressive and a really polished bat, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, even the athleticism of Kurtz is probably a little bit undersold. He's going to stick at first base, but I think it'd be a plus for first baseman. I don't think we'd necessarily talk about first base defense and care that much about it, but it is important, and I think it does make a difference. I sort of look at the lineup right now. They have Rueker kind of penciled in at DH. It wouldn't shock me if if Kurtz comes up and they want to keep Soderstrom's bat in the lineup. Maybe Soderstrom moves to DH. They move Rueker to the outfield and he kind of pushes out Seth Brown. I could see Kurtz coming up by July, maybe even a little bit earlier than that. But by midseason and kind of holding down that A's first base job, they need something to get the fans excited. It could be a better team than people expect. I think Scott hit the nail on the head when he said that. But I look at Kurtz, and I think he's also super polished. You know, the bats of ball skills are well above average. The swing decisions are plus. The power is plus. Like, his raw power isn't that far off from Jack Caglione, and he has much better plate skills, is a better first baseman. I think this was one of the best hitters in the draft. It was a really talented college positional class with Bizzana, with Kurtz, with Weatherholt, with Caglione and others. And it wouldn't shock me if we come back to this in a few years and say, all right, like, Nick Kurtz might actually be the most impactful hitter, maybe not all around player, but just in terms of what he can do. The big question is just staying healthy. He really hasn't made it through a full year healthy. Every single summer during his college tenure at Wake Forest, he was shut down, had some sort of procedure. He had the same thing when he came into pro ball last year and then it arrived in AFL a little bit late because of it. So I think the big thing with Kurtz is just staying on the field and staying healthy. We've seen this with hitters before. You can go back and, you know, bring a name up like Ian Kinsler, a guy that was really injured over the early part of his career and then kind of became an Iron Man. Like, I've heard this expression before when it comes to hitter injuries, but, you know, with pitchers, it's kind of, you know, a sign of things to come when there's injuries early on. With hitters, sometimes it's just little stuff, and even some of the tissue injuries can go away over time. That's not to say that it's something that you should sort of like just, you know, wave away with one hand and you know, ignore. But I do think as long as he stays on the field and is healthy and gets a full first half, it wouldn't shock me if he spends the second half of the season in the major leagues and really hits, because I think he's not that far off from being a major league quality hitter now, just a matter of maybe just seeing it a little bit more.
I will offer one counterpoint as far as a hitter, a top draft pick hitter who started out with seemingly like an injury-plagued career, then had a stretch of success, and then the injuries came back, and that would be Anthony Rendon, who, kind of the unfortunate example of that. But no, I agree with you in general. And the thing that does stand out, Kurtz, is it's not like he has a back injury that causes his problems year after year. He had a rib injury. He had a shoulder injury. And on that, that shoulder injury, I remember when that happened last year, there was some thought like, okay, are we going to see Nick Kurtz again during the, during the regular season for Wake? And he was back really quick, had a hamstring injury. These are the kind of injuries that they happen. And obviously it's not great, but they're not things where you say, oh, that's a chronic shoulder injury or a rib injury. That's the kind of thing that, that you say, okay, it may just be a fluke. And if you put that, whenever he's been on the field, Nick Kurtz has always performed. So it's not even something where it takes him a long time when he gets back. When he gets back, he's usually back. He has that swing. He really knows his swing where he just kind of hits the ground running and back to being a polished hitter almost from day one when he comes back off the IL.
Okay, and then I'm going to take the global picture, of course, for this A's team because they're trying to get themselves into a better public sphere as they head to Vegas at some point, maybe, but at least spend some time in Sacramento. And I think this is the team that has really gotten the most negative attention in our sport for the last at least half decade. Is there a future here just based on the farm system, right? Because, I mean, this team still gets tied on a casual basis, JJ, to the movie that came out a couple decades ago in Moneyball. And really, they haven't been ahead of the curve, I would say, for a while now. So do you think they're at a point here where at least the losing has led to some success with their farm system that's able to supplement a team that's now at least spending a little bit more and could turn them into a wild card contender?
Well, I think so, because I think that you look at this team right now. Jeff mentioned Brent Rooker. Brent Rooker had a breakout year last year. Lawrence Butler, had a great half of a season last year. This is the team that now – do not kind of lump the A's in with the bottom feeders, because I promise you, if you compare this A's lineup to, say, the Rockies lineup or the Marlins lineup or the White Sox lineup, it's not in that same comparison. This is a team that right now can put a reasonably reputable lineup onto the field, and then you throw in if a Kurtz and guys like this arrive before long, it could get even better. Now, the AL West is wide open. It does not look like that the Astros are the Astros that dominated this division for years. We'll see if the Rangers can get back to the team that won the World Series 2 years ago. But all that being said, the A's look like a competitive team, and that's a big improvement, even if, okay, they're going to be a competitive team playing in a minor league ballpark.
That's right. Yeah, this team could make some noise in 2025 and some promise here going forward, including also a pretty good manager who they extended recently as well. And that seems to be the formula, man. If I'm the A's, I'm trying to pinpoint that young talent and get some extensions going, because otherwise you're going to get closer to free agency and probably have to move those guys unless they're suddenly going to be spending at a different level. I highly doubt that. I'm worried about them paying their construction bills for Vegas if that happens. So anyway, A's fans and anyone else, hope you enjoyed this one. We have prospect by prospect team number one prospect profiles for you. So if you want to learn about the number one prospect on each team, we're here for you. We've got all of them. And if you don't see one, then it's coming soon. And make sure you subscribe to Baseball America over at baseballamerica.com for way more info there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a £100 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcastuk. Just go to Indeed.com/podcastuk right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.